Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Game Changer Lacrosse Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Uvoli. The Game Changer Lacrosse Podcast is about talking to people who have dedicated their life to the game of lacrosse and learning about who they are, how they got to where they are today, and what they do to improve themselves and their teams. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at GC Sports, and if you're a coach or a parent, check out Game Changer Team Manager in the App Store. You can ditch the emails and spreadsheets. The free Game Changer Team Manager app streamlines communication, scheduling, and live scoring into one easy-to-use app. Game Changer Team Manager is 100% free for your entire team. Learn more at gc.com/teammanager or search for Game Changer Team Manager in the App Store. Today in the show, we have Marcus Holman. Marcus is a graduate of North Carolina. He currently plays lacrosse for the Ohio Machine. He's a member of Team USA and will compete in the World Games in Israel this summer. Marcus is from Baltimore, Maryland. He played lacrosse at Gilman High School. At UNC, he was the Rookie of the Year in 2010 and a two-time All-ACC player. He was a two-time All-American and a two-time Twerton Trophy nominee. At one point, he held UNC's all-time scoring record until 2015, where he was passed by Joey Sankey. He's an MLL All-Star and two-time member of Team USA. He currently holds the records for most goals in a single MLL game with 11. Today in the show, we got a chance to talk about his time as a young player in high school, his time at UNC, how he mentally prepares for games, and much, much more. Here's my interview with Marcus Holman. Marcus, welcome to the show, man.
Joe, thanks for having me on, man. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Good to be here.
I'm excited to talk. So let's get started. How'd you get started playing lacrosse?
Yeah, well, you know, I think I like to tell people that I was born into it. my dad, Brian, played lacrosse at Johns Hopkins in the early 80s. He was a goalie there, a two-time All-American. And my mom also played at about the same time at Towson University. I think she led her team in scoring one year in the early 80s. And, yeah, you know, growing up in Baltimore, Maryland with two parents that played the sport, you know, I think I was given my first stick when I was pretty young and kind of just went through the ranks of Kelly Post, which is a rec system in Baltimore. And, yeah, just fell in love with the sport. And, you know, I've loved ever since. And what, 22 years later, we're still here and still able to play professionally, which is pretty awesome.
Right. So it sounds like a little bit you followed in your mom's footsteps rather than your dad. Your dad was the goalie. It sounds like your mom was the offensive player. How did that work out while you were growing up?
Yeah, well, my older brother, Matthew, who's 2 years older than me, he was actually a goalie. So he decided to follow in my dad's footsteps.
Gotcha.
And I think, you know, maybe I'm the only logical male in our family that decided it's not really fun to stand in a net and get pelted by 100-mile-an-hour shots.
Right.
I think I always had a kind of maybe a knack for scoring goals and, playing attack in midfield, whatever it was. I liked running down the field and throwing the ball in the back of the net. So that's kind of the way my career unfolded.
Gotcha. So as you were growing up, did you play any other sports or was it mostly lacrosse?
I played everything. Anything I could compete in, I was playing. You know, I think at a young age, you know, experimenting with soccer and even ice hockey. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents were fortunate enough to have a summer house in a little community called Sherwood Forest, which is based in Annapolis, Maryland. And, you know, I was able to play a lot of tennis and a lot of golf and, you know, ping pong, badminton, whatever it was,
right.
You know, I was out there running around, trying to play it. And then as I grew up and got older, you know, the sports kind of matriculate seasonally. And right. So I was a football, basketball, lacrosse guy in high mm-hmm. school. So I was a three sport athlete.
Right.
I didn't play basketball my senior year just because I didn't think the program at our school was in a really good spot. And I wanted to prepare for my last year of high school lacrosse. But
gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, you know, playing all those sports 100% impacted the career that I was able to have as a lacrosse player. You know, I think
right.
you mm-hmm. learn toughness and grit from playing football. You know, mm-hmm. you learn footwork and, you know, how to play defense and how to play picks by playing right. basketball. I think you learn a little patience and mental toughness playing a sport like golf. So I think to any young players out there, I mean, you know, playing multiple sports is very important in your development as an athlete. And like I said, it definitely holds true as I'm right. in my sixth year playing professionally. So,
right. Right. Yeah. I totally agree. What I always remember, you know, from when I was playing high school is the thing that stuck out to me is, you know, obviously they're football. So I played football, basketball, and lacrosse in high school too. So mm-hmm. I know where you're coming from in terms of the toughness and sort of the athletic ability with basketball. But the thing that always stuck out to me is, you know, maybe you were the guy in all three of those sports, right? But I definitely wasn't. We had at St. Anthony's, we had, you know, the best running back in Long Island, while I was there, you know, so I wasn't the guy that the ball was going to every time in football. And the same with basketball, right? You know, I wasn't the guy that they were giving the ball to when there was 10 seconds left, you know, on the clock. But what that taught me was a different perspective from when I was playing that, you know, it taught me how to be a better teammate, right? It taught me how to, it gave me perspective of other people on the team and what, you know, sort of role players are supposed to be like and how you're supposed to, you know, think about things when you're not the one where the ball is coming to you every single time. So it just gave me a different perspective. But I know exactly what you're talking about with you know, the different aspects of each sport.
Yeah, Joe, and I'll just piggyback off you there. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with that. I think so many kids today, you know, just want to specialize and just play lacrosse because right. they are really, really good at it. And like you said, you know, being that, you know, I'm way with you in basketball, I was a sixth man mm-hmm. off the bench.
Right.
And my role was to just play really tough defense and, like, you know, hit a corner three or two. You know, I wasn't the point guard,
right?
You know, running the show the entire game. I was mm-hmm. I was a substitute guy. And, you know, football, I was a starter, but, you know, it was more of a role position. It was like strong safety and right. just, you know, playing special teams and stuff like that. And then it's funny, even through my high school career, being surrounded by so many players, I think, you know, my senior year, this is a small number now, but we had seven Division I recruits in my class at Gilman.
Mm-hmm.
And being surrounded by so much talent, you know, again, sometimes the ball was in my stick at the end of the game, but, you know, you learn, you know, how to feed off other players and
right.
you know, how to make the right pass and how to, like, time up a clear through cut. Right. Like, learning those little skills is really important. So I that's a great point that you make just about right. playing for their sports.
Right. And it's an important skill to learn for kids who are going, you know, going from high school to college, where in high school,
yeah.
you know, chances are they're going to be, you know, the guy on their team. But when they get to college, unless they're a player that comes along, you know, every 1,000 kids, they're not going to be the kid who the ball is running through their freshman year, right? It's just very unlikely that that's going to happen. So you
right.
need to learn how to, you know, how to play your role, how to maybe take a second seat to certain players. So, yeah, it's absolutely an important skill to learn. But so getting back to you as you're growing up, you know, we talked about your mom, we talked about your dad. Who were some of the players that you looked up to as you were growing up that maybe you tried to emulate your game after?
Definitely. I think the first one and the most obvious one that you probably get from a lot of, you know, offensive minded players my age was Mikey Powell.
Right.
You know, just watching his 2 minute and 34 second highlight tape over and over and over again, and just going out my backyard. right. and working on that dip and dunk, or, you know, working on that finalizer move where he, you know, crosses Jack Reed up and makes him fall over the back of the goal. So he was the guy that like I saw those clips and was like, wow, this sport can be incredible. Right. And then I think, you know, as you mature and you grow up and, you know, I'm not the fleetest of the foot. I don't know if it has the quickness that Mikey Powell does, but kind of look for other players that maybe you can model your skill set after. So a guy that I loved and watched a lot too, his name was Adam Doniger. I'm sure you probably remember him.
Yeah, absolutely.
An attackman midi from Johns Hopkins, like kind of thick right-handed shooter, really good off-ball player. He was a guy I loved to watch when I was younger.
Yeah.
And then of course, like, you know, Kyle Harrison is so iconic with his split dodge and, you know, the way that he kind of changed dodging a little bit from the midfield position. He was awesome. You know, Paul Rabel, even into my high school years, was a guy that I've watched a lot. And last but not least, I'd say, I think Matt Ward, another great Virginia attackman that really just was so fundamental and skilled with both hands and just kind of always seemed to be in control of what he wanted to do. And those were a couple guys that I loved and watched for sure.
Right.
And tried to, you know, take pieces of their game and put it into my own.
Yeah. Can you talk about what you did sort of to emulate those players? You know, like, what was it, watching film and then, you know, going to the backyard and trying to do what they did?
Yeah, so definitely with the Mikey Powell stuff, you know, watching his YouTube highlights and going immediately into my backyard and, like, just trying to do what he could do over and over again until it felt comfortable. And then, you know, you practice it so many times and then it comes time for a game. And, you know, there's an element of risk there where you have to kind of just – you got to be aggressive and go for it and trust your training and
– right.
to hope that it translates from the practice field onto the game field.
Right.
And then again, as I mentioned, growing up in Baltimore, I was so fortunate to, you know, we lived 3 or 4 miles from Homewood Field. Mm-hmm. So every Saturday in the spring, I was down, you know, I was at every single Hopkins game 45 minutes before the game started, watching warmups, and watching those guys play. And, like, you know, watching Paul Rabel step down and just, like, hit corner after corner after corner. You know, as the stands started to fill up, like, that's what kind of sparked my love for lacrosse. And, like, I was like, dang, I want to be one of those guys one day playing in front of 5 or 6,000 people in college. So,
Gotcha. So, you know, once you're in high school, what were some of the things that you did to get noticed as a player, right? How did you stand out from the crowd?
Yeah, I think... I mean, I think it does go back to the fundamentals, you know, being fundamentally sound, shooting the ball overhand when you have a, you know, an 8 or 10 yard shot. But for me, you know, I was never, and I'm still not the flashiest player. you know, I like to say I'm a substance over style guy.
Right.
So things like picking up ground balls and riding were things that, you know, just instilled in me from my dad were little things that could get you on the field and make a difference. And I actually do remember when I got recruited by Johns Hopkins, Coach Petromala emailing me saying, you know, hey, I just love the way that you rode for the entire game. Like, that's one of the reasons we're actually recruiting you.
Right.
Which is, it, you know, to me, I just thought, like, everybody rode really hard and everybody picked up ground balls. But then as I got older, you realize that, like, some players don't do that.
Right.
So just trying to be good at those skills that necessarily don't take talent, you know, like I mentioned riding ground balls, like communicating, setting good picks, you know, backing up the cage and attacking, like just doing those little things and trying to make my teammates better, I think allowed me maybe to get recruited and, to play in college.
Right. Right. Yeah. It sounds like you focused on the foundational elements and then you built upon that, right? Which I'm sure coaches preach this, but I'm not sure that a lot of players understand that, right? Where There are foundational elements of the attack position, right, and of the midfield position, and then of the defensive position. And those are the things that you have to figure out and learn before you can learn anything else. And that's what makes you a whole attackman or a whole midfielder or a whole defense, right?
Exactly, right? It's like, you know, like building a house. You got to have the foundations laid in place before you can put in the glass windows or the really cool sauna in the bathroom, stuff like that.
So
That's a good point. You know, I mean, like, and then you just build off those fundamentals, right? So like, you know, you turn the cage, you turn the corner earlier in the game and you fake high, you shoot low, you score. Mm-hmm. And then like the next time you do it, like you come around and you work on the dip and dunk. So it's like fake high, fake low, finish high. And then like you said, you start, you know, compiling those skills and piecing them together. Mm-hmm. That's how you can really, you know, complete your skill set as an attackman.
Right. And what I always, you know, thinking back to when I was playing, the biggest lesson that I learned was like, when you work on something like, say, an overhand set shot, you do it, say, like 100 times, right? And each time it's getting better and better until, you know, you're like, all right, I have this overhand set shot down. And then you know, just for sake of example, you say, all right, I'm going to work on my, you know, running overhand shot. When you do that running overhand shot, you realize like, wow, my running overhand shot is better than it was before I started the set shot. So it's like, it's not that you're starting from ground zero when you do a running shot. It's that like you're already halfway there because of the foundational elements that you built with that overhand shot. Right. So
exactly.
Yeah. Right. So, so let's move on to your college career. What made you decide on UNC?
Yeah. So like I mentioned, I was fortunate enough to get recruited and I narrowed the list down to four schools that I all visited. So those were Johns Hopkins, Notre Dame, Princeton, and North Carolina. North Carolina was actually my first visit and I just distinctly remember leaving the campus and maybe it was because it was my first visit, but I just remember leaving and having a really, really good feeling in my heart about, you know, this is where I can see myself, for the next 4 years. And I think, anybody that, you know, has gone to North Carolina or, you know, visited there, as an athlete or not, we'll tell you that I think it gives you a really well-rounded college experience. I think you get challenged academically, which I was. You know, from my perspective, you get a really fun lacrosse environment, you know, playing in the ACC, playing in big-time games, and the chance to at that time, turn the UNC program around.
Right.
And then from a social scene, you know, it's awesome. You have Franklin Street and you have a lot of competitive sports on campus. You know, you look at the UNC women's soccer program, you look at the basketball team is perennially in the top 10.
Right.
The football team is competitive in the, you know, the combination of being able to go to a basketball game against Duke, you know, being able to go to a big football game on Saturday, like those aspects. I think I made the right decision, and I think those were some of the factors that played in my decision to go to UNC.
Right. If you don't mind me asking, you know, you mentioned your dad played at Hopkins. Was it hard making that choice, UNC over Hopkins? Because like we talked about, I sort of had to make I made the same choice, but my dad went to UNC. And I chose to go to Virginia, and that was tough. I wanted to go to UNC my whole life. So was it the same sort of push and pull for you?
It's funny, actually. I can understand where you could see that being like a tough thing for him or for me, but he actually was almost encouraging me to you know, my own path and explore different avenues. You know, again, nothing against Johns Hopkins, but I think, like I mentioned, talking about UNC, you get maybe a broader college experience at a big state school like North Carolina than you do at Johns Hopkins, which is smaller. And, you know, I think while Hopkins does have its pros, I think one of the pros being that, like, lacrosse is the main sport on campus and you get 8,000 people at your home games, I think – I'm not the full college experience.
Right.
It doesn't compare in
right.
my opinion.
Right.
So he was, you know, it wasn't, he supportive of me no matter what.
Right.
You know, I don't think his ego was going to let, my decision, you know, get in his way or whatever. So
right.
it wasn't very difficult. He was really supportive of whatever.
Gotcha.
I would have chosen.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's I was hoping that was going to be your answer. That was sort of the same thing with my dad. It was the exact same thing where it was very much just like, hey, this is your thing. You know, you need to forge sort of your own path here. The decision is totally up to you, you know? And I think that's so important, right? That's like such an important part, especially in a sport like lacrosse where everything is so tight knit. You know, there's a lot of people who play lacrosse because their parents played lacrosse, you know, it like sort of runs in the family. I think it's super important to, you know, obviously parents are very, very passionate about their kids, but
yeah,
you know, they need to, you know, sort of be willing to like step aside and say, hey, this is your choice. This is what you're actually doing with your life. Right.
Correct.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. So, so when you got on UNC's campus, you know, that freshman year, did you feel like it was a fit right away?
Yeah. You know, I felt good about it. Again, it was kind of an interesting situation. I was able to commit, I think, junior. So by today's standards, that would be like late.
But right.
Back then, with you know, some of the other kids I was playing with in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And in the following year, I mentioned my dad had quit his job as a mortgage owner and decided to jump back into coaching full time. He was able to finagle a meeting with Coach Joe Bresci, who had just been hired at UNC, and was able to join the staff. So in that year and a half after I committed, so many things happened. Like the coach that I committed to UNC under, Coach John Halls, was no longer there. Coach Bresci had been hired, and my dad had joined the staff. So like when I stepped on campus as a freshman, I did feel comfortable because, you know, my dad was on the staff. Now, even though he was coaching the defense and the goalies, and we weren't really interacting, you know, on the practice field per se, it was nice just having him there.
Right.
Because I think anybody that's ever met him knows that his coaching style, it's about way more than just lacrosse. It's more like, he's more of a life coach and a motivator than he is like an X's and O's guy. So, you know, coming in and being able to pass the run test, which was a big deal at the time at UNC. And then I was able to select my jersey number, which in high school I wore 17, and that was kind of what I was hoping I could wear at UNC. But that jersey was taken, and a player by the name of Bart Wagner had recently graduated, and he wore number one. So in light of that and wanting to have the career that Bart did, I picked number one, and to kind of just set in motion a pretty good turn of events for the next 4 years. So
a couple questions. What was the run test? Can you tell what that was?
The run test for us when we came back in September was on the track, and it was running a mile and a half in 9 minutes. Which is, you know, again, that's a 6-minute mile pace, but for an extra half mile there. So pretty challenging. You know, again, I was able to, our family had moved to Chapel Hill because of my dad taking the job.
Right.
So during that summer going into my freshman year, I was just like living on the lacrosse field and living in the weight room.
Right.
No, I think that might be a part of my career that sometimes I overlook, is that during the summers when I was in college, I was working out at a really constant rate, and it allowed me to improve during the summertime, whereas maybe, you know, summers might have been relaxing or working jobs. You know, I was just coaching lacrosse camps and working out.
Hey guys, I just want to jump in quick to make sure you know about Game Changer Team Manager. Coaches, you can ditch the emails and spreadsheets when it comes to managing your team. The free Game Changer Team Manager app streamlines communication, scheduling, and live scoring into one incredibly easy to use app. No more sending out mass emails or texts to communicate game or practice changes. Keep everyone on the same page with the Game Changer Team Manager app. And like I said, best of all, it's totally free. Learn more at gc.com/teammanager or search for Game Changer Team Manager in the App Store. So, you know, this might be a hard question to answer, but it sounds like when you were going to UNC, a lot of things were changing. Was there, you know, did you ever sort of, you know, get worried that, you know, maybe this wasn't the right choice or, you know, maybe I wasn't going to go to UNC? Obviously, Coach Bresci has nothing but a great reputation, you know, so I'm sure him being hired was just, you know, another great thing about UNC. But was there ever any sort of hesitation when a lot of things were changing before you actually got there?
No, I think so. So when I, again, when I decided to commit to UNC, and I think I received this advice along the way, during the recruiting period, was that, you know, you don't choose a school based off the coach. Right. So, right. You know, while I did really like Coach Hawes, and, you know, his son, John, and I were to play together in college, you know, that wasn't the reason that I committed to UNC. So when the coaching change happened, you know, it was a little bit shocking, but, you know, I still felt confident in, you know, the pros and cons list that I made, and then the reasons that I wanted to go to UNC were still the same. But I kind of knew that, you know, again, doing my homework during the recruiting process, I knew that, like I mentioned, Bart Wagner, with him graduating, that there would be an open spot at the Attack. So I wasn't maybe necessarily confident, but I at least knew that I would be given the opportunity to compete, to be a starter, which I think is also an important thing to look at when you're being recruited. So all those factors combined, you know, it led me to be confident about my decision. And even though, like you said, things were a little bit in turmoil, you know, I was always, I always felt good about my decision to go there.
Right. That I think that is such a good point, right? Like you need to go to a school because you're going to that school, not because you're going for a coach or you're going for, you know, to play lacrosse on a specific team. Obviously those are very important factors, but the one constant that's going to be there, no matter what happens, no matter how your career goes, is the school that you're actually going for. I think that's a great point. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say another really kind of cool piece of advice that I heard after the fact was, you know, when you're deciding on a college, you know, that's not a 4-year decision. It's a 40-year decision, right? You're going to make friends that are going to be friends with you for the rest of your life.
Right.
You're going to network. You're going to be able to meet people. And 40 years down the road, you know, you want to be proud of the school that you chose and be able to look back on it with really positive memories. So I think that was a cool piece of advice that I heard. I think it was after I had graduated, but it still resonates with me about college.
Yeah, that's a great point. And actually, I mean, you know, and Carolina is one of the best places for that, right? I didn't even go to Carolina, and I made contacts through that school just for my cousins and my dad going, you know, that I'm still friends with and still can reach out to you on a moment's notice. That's how great the alumni program is there.
Right.
So can you talk a little bit about what you did as a player to continue to improve, you know, while you're at UNC?
Yeah. So I think obviously, you know, going from high school to college is a tough transition, I think for any player. Mm-hmm. I think being able to play in the MIAA in Baltimore allowed me to maybe be a little bit more comfortable with the speed of play. But, you know, again, I knew that and I've always known this, that I'm not the most talented player, but I like to think that my work ethic has allowed me to put myself in positions to be successful, and has allowed me to maybe gain a mental edge against my opponent. So I was the guy that was staying after to shoot. And even if it was only 5 or 10 minutes, you're still that adds up, and you do it, and then 3 weeks, and then a month. Next thing you know, you've taken more shots your opponent or your teammate that you're competing against for a starting spot.
Right.
So that was important. And then, staying after in the weight room as well. And it was the same deal with jumping rope or getting in the ladder and doing footwork. Mm-hmm. And I think, I look back to my freshman year and I think about a guy like Sean Delaney, who played there and was just a great captain and a great leader and a guy that was really pushing, players to step outside their comfort zone and really push themselves to the max and work really hard. So, I'm grateful for a guy like that. And again, my dad being there and getting in my ear, maybe as a father, after practice and saying, "Hey, did you get your extra work in? Or, what are you doing to separate yourself?"
Right.
So yeah, that was, I think, the difference maker for me.
Right. So, I think I understood the point that you were making, but you broke up a little bit, I do want to make sure that you make this point. I think what you were saying is, after practice, you get, 5 to 10 minutes of shots in. Those build upon each other. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. So
right.
If it's only 10 minutes after practice, but you do it every day,
right?
Those 100 shots. Right. By the end of the week, that's 500 shots. By the end of the month, that's 2,000 shots. And by the end of 5 months, that's 10,000 shots. So it's those continue to build on top of each other. And if you're not committed to doing that, then you're losing out on opportunities to improve your skills and get better.
Right. Absolutely. I think that's such an important point to make. I wanted to make sure that was, everybody could hear that. Can you talk about how you balanced school and lacrosse while you're at UNC? Because this is one thing that I think it's really important for kids to understand is that, I was literally talking about this yesterday with somebody. When you are a student athlete, you're going to be working. There's no way around it. 8 a.m. to sometimes 10 p.m. every single day. I just want to hear you talk about how you balance school and lacrosse.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, I think another thing some kids don't realize is how much of a time commitment Division I lacrosse is, and how tiring at times it can be on an 18-year-old that's, like I said, transitioning from high school to college. So everything we did at UNC was in the morning. So we couldn't have classes before 11 a.m., mm-hmm. So, let's say most of the time I was probably up at around 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. And, some days we would have practice, some days we would have practice, and then immediately following that, we'd go into the weight room and lift.
Right.
So you're putting your body through, almost probably 2.5 to 3 hours of taxing physical work.
Right.
And then with that as your base, you have to go and take, three classes, from ranging from 11 a.m. to 4 or 5 p.m. With the occasional night class if you signed up for those. So it is it's like a 9-to-5 job, quote unquote.
Right.
And that's to be able
go ahead.
I think a key with that, freshmen at UNC are required to have study hall, so you have to log in 6 hours per week. Which again, that helps kind of keeps you balanced and keep you organized. Mm-hmm. And then throughout my career, I kind of just stuck by that pattern. You know what I mean? So like, instead of when my classes were done, just like going home and sitting on the couch and watching TV, I tried to get all my work done for the next day, or like get all my homework done or reading done. So then when I could finally like pick my shoes off, like I could actually chill out and enjoy some relaxation. So,
right.
I know the word time management gets thrown around a lot, but that is really what it comes down to.
100%. Yeah,
and sacrifice. I think that's another word that maybe doesn't get used as much as it should. You've got to sacrifice video games. You've got to sacrifice, you know, maybe going on dates or being in a relationship. If you want to be a really good, if you want to be a really great lacrosse player and a really great student. So, to be honest, looking back, I wish I dedicated some more time to the classroom. Right. I think my overall GPA could have been higher if I was maybe a little bit more diligent in my senior year, but hindsight's 2020 and can't take it back.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, players, every single player in the history of the sport is going to look back and say something similar to that, right? I wish I had done this. I wish I had done that. No matter what, even if you did it perfectly, you're still going to look back and be like, ah, I wish, you know what, I should have spent a little bit more time in the gym, right? It's just the nature, right? But, you know, so one thing that, you know, you mentioned time management, you know, and like I said, I was talking to somebody about this yesterday, you know, just trying to think through the hours that are involved as a student athlete, right? So, I mean, at minimum, you're probably doing 3 hours of class every single day, right? That doesn't include any sort of travel that needs to happen in between those classes. And you have 2 hours of 2 hours of practice most time, which really sort of blocks out to like a 3 hour block because you got to get there, you got to stretch, you know, all that stuff. Then it's, you know, weight room, which is, you know, I'll say another hour. Then that's not including study hall, like you mentioned. That's not including any sort of rehab that you might have to do. That's not including any of the studying that you have to do for classes or any of the extra work that you have to do. So it really is, a lot to take in. And, the one thing that I learned, and I wish I would have learned this, you know, in college, I learned it afterwards, was you got to look at your day and you have to say, you know, you mentioned time management. You have to say, like, here are the things that I have to do every single day and I have to do them before I relax or take off or, you know, can really like turn it off for the day. These are the major things that no matter what I have to do every single day. And that, you know, if you go through that, you think like, all right, I have practice, I have class, I have study, I have rehab. Okay. I've done all that stuff. Now I can put in some extra time. Now I've done all that. Yeah. Now I can relax. Right. It's difficult, but it's what you got to do. Like you said, sacrifice.
Yeah. And it's at the end of the day, it's rewarding, right? And you know, you're competitive. I'm very competitive and I wanted to win every single game that I played in at UNC, but like looking back on it, you know, those life tools that you learn along the way and the sacrifices that you make, you know, when you see the extra reps that you're taking after practice pay off on game day, you know, you learn that skill of, hey, you know, a little bit of extra work in anything in life will yield results. When it comes down to business, you know, if you didn't prepare for the presentation that you're about to give in front of 200 people, you're not going to do well. You know, if you prepared and you recited and you rehearsed it, then, you know, it'll go better than it would have the other way.
That's a great point. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. So, you know, can you talk about your transition from college to MLL? Was it a tough transition or was it easy for you?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if tough the right word, maybe just like eye-opening. You know, you complete a 4-year career at a place like UNC, and you know, my senior year was the best team that we had, and we went on a 10-game winning streak. We were number one in the country. We get to the quarterfinals and we blow a second half lead to Denver and we lose. And then, you know, that was on a Sunday, and then Thursday night, I'm suiting up in a different color jersey and I'm ready to play against some grown men.
Right.
You go from kind of like the big dog on campus to just another little fish in the pond. And, you know, for me, it was a transition from, you know, my jersey being laid out and snacks and you know, things kind of being catered to you at a high end Division I school like UNC to you know, a franchise that we ended up being 2-12 that year, right, in 2013. And so you kind of went, it wasn't tough. It was just, like I said, a little eye opening, and you've got to adjust to the speed. You've got to adjust to long sticks, absolutely hammering your forearms, and, right, you've got to adjust to guys picking off passes, and you got to adjust to goalies that aren't going to fall for the first fake that you throw.
Right.
So those little adjustments were definitely challenging along the way. And I actually, you know, got thrown onto a team where I was playing midfield for most of the year,
yeah,
which again was another transition for me. But again, like I think I'm just unfortunate that I've taken the mindset where I just take that stuff as a challenge and embrace it. You know what I mean? Like playing midfield my rookie year, I think maybe helped me understand how defenses are set up differently and how a slide can be different from that point of view. So,
right.
It was challenging for sure, but, you know, I think it was fun at the same time.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about, this might be a different, difficult question to answer, but, you know, the change of speed, you know, the goalies that don't fall for the first fake. Can you talk, what did you do to help make that transition or to get used to that? Right. Cause I know what you're talking about and it's absolutely jarring, but what does a player do or what should a player do to get through that transition?
Yeah. I think again, watching film is important when it comes to that level. You can pick up on goalies' tendencies, I think, a little bit.
Right.
But again, you know, you just got to continue to work and get back to it. I think, again, professional lacrosse right now in the outdoor ranks, we're not at a point where we can just play full time and make a living off that, right? So a lot of other guys are working jobs. And at the time, I was kind of uncertain about what my career path was going to be. So I just dove back into training. To be in really good shape, to be able to make plays in the fourth quarter where, you know, a guy that maybe works, you know, 10 hours a day up in New York City, maybe his legs are a little tired in the second half of the game. And I'm able to make the play there because of the training that I've done. And I think for me specifically, it was like developing a little bit more range on my shot. You know, maybe adding like a half notch of whip on my stick that allowed me to do that, and like adjusting to that accordingly.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I want to make sure I have this correct. So, a few weeks ago, you now have the single goal record for, is it 11 goals? In the MLL?
It was 11. Yeah.
It was 11. So I actually don't even know if it was the record that you broke, but I was on the field for another record that came before that, which was 10 goals in a single game by Ryan Powell when he was on, when he played for San Francisco, which was just, it just seemed like every time he turned around, he was there for another goal. But obviously that's an amazing achievement. And we can talk about that in and of itself. But one thing that I saw after that game was I saw that you tweeted out, you mentioned that meditation played a big role in your growth recently. Is that correct? I want to make sure that I actually have that correct. I couldn't find the tweet afterwards before this, but is that right?
I think meditation, so like just studying the mental side of competition and the mental side of, we can dive into that, but
yeah,
you know, it's funny. I think 2 years ago, John Grant, I was on the field for John Grant Jr. when he had 10, he had 10 goals against the Lizards. Right. And I was, you know, I think I fed him for a couple. Looking back on that, like he's got the hot hand. Hey, just, you know, feed the ball to Jr. And some of his goals were more impressive than mine, some more unassisted goals. But, you know, it's funny, right? Because, again, being a competitor and being a leader, like, you know, we're the machine, we're 2-2 right now. We have a huge game this weekend. So like my focus, I can't really be caught like thinking about that game per se, just cause I'm,
right.
I'm forward thinking. I want to, whatever the next challenge is, like, I want to go after that one. Mm-hmm. But I think when I, you know, when I look back on it one day, you know, I guess you just get in the zone and you get lucky. I mean, like, I don't know. My teammates were finding me all over the field. They threw some incredible passes to me, guys like Tom Schreiber and Jake Bernhardt and
right.
Connor Cannizzaro. So, you know, I think you get lucky, like 18 shots.
Right.
Which is crazy. That's so many shots for an outdoor game.
I don't think I've ever taken 11 shots in a game. I mean, I've definitely never come close to 11 goals. It's incredible. Oh, wait, so sorry, how many shots did you take?
I was 11 for 18 shooting.
11 for 18. That is absolutely incredible. So can you talk about, I want to make sure I heard you right. You said it wasn't meditation. It was the mental side of the game that you tweeted about. Gotcha. Can you talk about that a little more?
Yeah, I think just, again, as I've grown, like I've learned so much that I wish I would have known when I was in college. Mm-hmm. You know, there were times I just remember at North Carolina where, you know, I'm a passionate player. Like we've talked about lacrosse for an hour now. I could probably talk about it for 5 hours. And
right.
You know, the sport means a lot to me. I care a lot about, you know, respecting the game and playing it the right way. And I want to be a great teammate and be a winner. So I think I wore all of that so much on my sleeve. Like I was just so emotional when I would play, and, you know, right. I didn't have a goal in the first quarter, you know, I'd be gripping my stick a little bit tighter, or right. if things weren't going the right way early, you know, it would be, you know, maybe like a full on freak out at halftime or stuff like that. But I think as I grew and just read more and just learned and just watched other athletes, you know, I just think about a guy like Roger Federer, right? Like how mm-hmm. in control of his emotions he is throughout, you know, maybe a 4-hour tennis match. You know, and picking up on being a little bit more even keeled and not focusing so much on the outcome of the game, but focus just on the process of making the next play or, you know, if we call a timeout and we have the ball, just executing what the specific play that's drawn up is. And if you do that over and over again, like the outcome will take care of itself. Hopefully you put yourself in a position to win the game, but, a book that I've recommended to hundreds of people is called The Mindful Athlete by George Mumford.
Right.
George Mumford he's a psychologist. He was the guy that worked with, Phil Jackson and the Lakers, with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and kind of, you know, he's a sports psychologist that worked with them on, you know, the mental aspect of the game. And reading that book just kind of, it just, I learned a couple things and I've did them. It helped. And it just allowed me not to be so drained towards the end of games. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So, you know,
right.
That's been important to me. I think it's important for athletes to hear that, right? We're so like hardwired to just be, you know, taught like hard work and physicality and reps and everything that we've talked about for the past hour. But like, who's teaching you like how to compete or how to respond if things aren't going your way early?
If you're someone that is
really passionate, like it can be tough to control those emotions at times.
Right. Yeah. So I totally agree. What's actually, what happened to me was I sort of went, for me at my freshman year in Virginia, which was arguably like my best year in college, I distinctly remember, I figured out that, when something went wrong, like, you know, the example that you gave when the first quarter goes by and you don't have a goal. In high school, I remember freaking out a little bit. I know exactly what you're talking about. You start gripping your stick yeah. a little bit more, and you start worrying about like, all right, I got to get on the board here. I got to do something.
Yeah, right.
And, right. And I remember my freshman year, I somehow figured out that you just got to take a breath and realize yeah. that the next opportunity is going to come to you soon.
Yeah, right.
And just trust
right.
that that's going to happen. And that was such a big development. And after I graduated, actually after I stopped playing lacrosse, through business, I was connected with somebody who is a CEO coach, and he actually got me into meditation, which is why I saw your tweet about the mindful athlete, and by far meditation was something that I absolutely wish that I had learned when I was in high school or in college, because everything that you said are exactly the things that I learned from meditation, right? Like that it's not about the end result. It's about the process, that you need to be focused on the small things. You need to realize, you have to trust the process, right? Those are all things that you learn from meditation. And I guarantee you that would have made me a better athlete and a better competitor when I was in college. If only because it's going to control my, what's the right word here? It'll give me a better ability to control my reactions to things. You're less emotional, you're less out of control. Right.
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 And I think I've made that part of my pregame routine. It's just lying on my back and, doing the inhale one, exhale two, just counting up to 10 and visualizing the game, when I put my jersey on, when we walk out on the field, what end are we going to be shooting at first? You almost play the game out in your mind beforehand. Mm-hmm. That way, when reality hits, you're a little bit more relaxed, maybe, and comfortable with it.
Absolutely.
But I would say, too, and just to add on to my point just about, not scoring in the first quarter, I've come to realize how I think people are maybe quick to judge, let's say, an attackman based off of how many points he scores in a game or how many goals he scores. Right. But like, there's so many other things that you can do to get into the game, like quote unquote into the game, like go pick up a ground ball, go get a ride back, go set a really good pick, go communicate to a teammate and set him up in a position to score. And when he does score, like, you should take as much gratification from that as you do, if you score your own goal. Obviously, if you play a whole game as an attackman and you're not scoring any points, we've got to figure something out. But it's like, it shouldn't just be like, I need to score,
right. Yeah. I'll take that a step further. Is you should focus on the things that you can control, right?
Right. Exactly.
Scoring a goal is not necessarily something that you can control, right? Because there's a lot of factors that go into it, right? Getting an assist, same thing, but you can control how hard you break out, right? To be open for your face-off guy coming down. You can control how quickly you get back to be in position for a good ride, right? Those are all things that you can control, and then the game sort of comes to you. So I think you're right on. Well, listen, man, I feel like, to your point, we could talk about this for seriously 5 hours. And, you are the coach at Utah. So we will definitely have to have you back on the show to talk about your coaching career and about Utah that's going D1 next year. But before I let you go, there's one thing that I've asked every coach and player who's come on. What are three things that everyone should be doing every day to get better at whatever it is they do? It doesn't have to be just lacrosse.
Wow. That's a loaded question.
Tough question.
I think, number one for me, I guess I'll start with break a sweat. Specifically if you're an athlete, if you're a lacrosse player, you gotta be working out, and pushing yourself physically. If you don't play lacrosse, there's still just been so many studies that show how great exercise is for your, not only your physical body, but your brain as well. I think it's something that the people that I surround myself with, I'm constantly pushing them to push themselves in their workouts and break a sweat. Wow. Every day, huh? I guess we'll go lacrosse specific here. I think you should have your stick in your hand every day, whether that's 5 minutes of wall ball or 50 minutes of shooting and repetition. You know, I think, again, if you look at some of the greatest players that have ever played, they're not the best athletes. They're not the biggest, fastest, strongest, but, you know, their stick work is incredible. I look at a kid like Connor Fields, the Albany attackman that just finished his incredible career. And, you know, he looks like your average Joe. He's probably 5'11", you know, 170. But right, the things that he can do with his stick work is absolutely incredible. So for a lacrosse player, just the more touches, the more reps you can get with your stick, I think the better off you'll be.
Right.
And, wow, number every day, huh? How about give thanks? Be grateful. Oh, yeah. You know, something I try to do every day, I can't say that I do it every day, is write down three things that I'm thankful for. And they could be something really, really small and simple. They could be deeper, maybe on a more personal level about your family or your loved ones. I think that's important. And then, you know, when you look back on that journal, if you've done it maybe twice a week, you know, you have over, you know, 60, 70, 80 things that you're grateful for. And you can look back and read through it, and I think they'll make you feel good. So gratitude is one of our pillars at the University of Utah. We have five pillars that our program's based off. Humility, honesty, passion, gratitude, and trust serve as the pillars of our program and how we interact with each other. And they have nothing to do with lacrosse necessarily.
Right.
Those are just really important pieces to what we're trying to do and build young men out there. So, so three things: break a sweat, play some wall ball, and be grateful. I think
that's
awesome. Those would be my three pieces of advice for anybody.
That's perfect. Perfect. Well, listen,
cool.
Marcus, thanks a lot for taking the time. I really appreciate it. Like I said, we will definitely have you on in the near future to talk about Utah and coaching there. But I appreciate you taking the time. We'll talk again soon. Thanks a lot.
Of course. Yeah, Joe, I had a blast. Thanks for talking with me.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Game Changer Lacrosse Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Uvoli. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Uvoli. You can find more episodes of the Game Changer Lacrosse Podcast on The Season at theseason.gc.com. If you like the podcast, please take a second to give it a positive review on iTunes. This helps more people find the podcast. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at GC Sports. And if you're a coach, a parent, or you run a travel or club team, check out Game Changer Team Manager in the App Store. It's an essential, all-in-one scheduling and communication app for lacrosse coaches and parents. Game Changer Team Manager is free, it's easy to use, and it doesn't serve ads. Learn more at gc.com/team manager. Until next time, keep working and keep getting better.